Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where seeing things differently inspires limitless possibilities. The Limitless podcast was created in order to inform, educate, entertain, and share stories from within the blind and partially sighted community that show that the opportunities for those who are blind or partially sighted are truly limitless. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce you to your host, the founder of Blind Beginnings, Sean Marcellet.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're talking about being blind with cerebral palsy, and I am excited to introduce Priya. Welcome to the podcast, Priya.
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Is this your first time? I think it is, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us a little bit about your vision, your CP, your anything else you want to share.
Okay. So hi, I'm Priya. I'm a woman who's totally blind apart from light perception. And I also have cerebral palsy, which impacts both my legs and sometimes my hands. Yeah. I'm 17. I'm about to graduate soon.
Awesome. And you're one of our youth leaders. So very cool.
Yeah.
You approached me about this topic, having a podcast about this. So why don't you tell me why you wanted to talk about this on the podcast?
So I wanted to talk to you about this because I was looking at statistics on vision loss. Mm-hmm. And people who are totally blind were just kind of underserved, like there's 2% of us. And then I'm like, okay, well, you know, we've had podcasts on like what it's like to be blind, I'm sure. Why not have a different perspective on vision loss and what it's like to live with more than one diagnosis?
Okay, so you mentioned having a dual diagnosis. Do you mind sharing a little bit about how you became blind and with CP?
So when my mom had me, as you know, she was pregnant, and she went in for an ultrasound one day, and I think, I don't know how it works, but then she just went into labor like that. So I was born 25 weeks, and just for context, a baby's brain is finished developing in the 24th week of pregnancy. So I don't think there was any risk of me being developmentally disabled now that I look back on it. But doctors were saying, oh, you know, she'll never be able to, I don't know. She'll never be able to walk or whatever. But I can walk. And it's something about premature babies, you know, 24 to 22 weeks, I'm sure, is that, you know, you're told by the doctors, if your child has a disability, oh, they'll never be able to do this, they'll never be able to do that. But I mean, I'm here, mm-hmm. I'm in high school, I'm about to join Brown University's pre-college program. So I'm sure, you know, whatever they said that I can't do, mm-hmm. I'm exceeding their expectations. So
yeah,
I'm also an honors student. So
that's awesome. I think that's really great for parents who have kids who have heard that messaging from doctors that, oh, they'll never be able to A, B, C, D, to be able to hear straight from your mouth that, haha, they were wrong. I can do things.
Yeah.
So that prematurity caused your blindness as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
My eyes were underdeveloped.
Right. Okay.
And that led to me having ROP, which is retinopathy from maturity.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what led to my blindness.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the challenges with having a dual diagnosis.
Well, let's start off with education wise, and I'm sure I've been hammering this in, so you know this quite good. When it comes to education and disability, I'm generalizing it, but when it comes to education and disability, especially with cerebral palsy, and, you know, I don't know about, yeah, probably vision loss.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't know, but I was thought of as somebody who had an intellectual disability. So I wasn't taught the right way. Mm-hmm. So when I went to high school, I was good, apart from math, because I'm not I mean, if you ask me a math problem at the grade 10 level, I'm stumped. I can't answer it. And that's because I'm behind on like my math level is at grade two. Like I can't do beyond that right now, but I'm working on that. They said that, you know, we don't know how this works. So we're just going to assume that she's intellectually disabled. And that's like, well, yeah, but now you got a high schooler who's not intellectually disabled. They took me for a psych guidance assessment and I was average on that. So, and, you know, despite that, my elementary school, they said that, oh, you know, we don't know. I also couldn't read. I wasn't taught how to read. Wasn't taught how to do math. So when I entered just the high school I'm at, I could not read. Like could not write either. Didn't teach me the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. So that's, you know, that's pretty depressing when you think about it, because you're making assumptions even though you didn't test somebody. Like, yeah, so there's a big challenge education-wise. Eventually my EA, she's awesome. I don't know how she managed to put up with me, but you know, she taught me how to read. I learned how to read within like 6 months. So I'm really good at reading and I can write pretty good. So, you know, I was caught up very quickly, but when it comes to math, I'm just like, no, I need to go back to grade two, you know, math wise. And learn everything again, because I for the life of me cannot do fractions or whatever.
Well, math is very visual, so you know, both components of like not being introduced to it, not having those lowered expectations right from day one, and then it also being very visual. I feel like maybe you picked up on some things around the alphabet and, you know, just by listening, but you can't really like learn math just by listening to people talk about math around you.
It's okay. If you're not doing it. It doesn't stick as much as it, you know, as if you're properly engaged and you're properly, you know, actively doing it, that's how it's going to stick. It doesn't stick, you know, otherwise.
Yeah. That's pretty incredible that they just assumed you had an intellectual disability, didn't bother teaching you those basics. And then you go to high school and, or I guess, was it in grade 3 or 4 that you started to learn more?
No. So I wasn't taught how to read until grade 7.
Okay.
And then, that was with another EA who had a deaf blind student. She taught me how to read a little bit. But I don't know if we didn't do it very often or because I forgot how to do it. And then 8th grade came along. And this is where it's controversial, I know, but this is where I think the lockdowns actually benefited me in the long run, because I learned how to read. And I went to high school and I had a different EA, which is the one I have now. You know, and that EA taught me how to read and, you know, write, and we're working on math still. I'm pretty good at reading and writing.
Is your EA a Braillist?
Yes.
Okay. Because normally it's the vision teacher that teaches the student how to read and how to read and write Braille, at least. So that's interesting that it was your EA.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, at first I hated it because I wasn't used to it, but because I was doing it on the Braille Note Touch, and then I just got used to it and like, oh, this is fun. And now I want to go, you know, beyond, if there's more than grade two Braille, then I'll try and read it.
Right. Yeah. No, it doesn't go past grade two.
Oh, it doesn't?
No. Okay. That's okay. You're done. If you know grade two or contracted Braille, then you have arrived. You have learned Braille.
Okay. Yeah. I mastered them in 6 months. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's I mean, I get it. I learned Braille in about a month, actually, but because I was just learning, you know, learning the contractions and memorizing, but I forget lots of them because I learned it so quickly and I don't practice it enough. So I think when you use it every day, it reinforces and kind of sticks in your brain.
Yeah.
Because I will often come across a contraction, I'm like, I don't know what this says.
Yeah. Yeah, that can happen.
What I'm hearing from that is lowered expectations is one challenge of having a dual diagnosis. Right. What else? What else?
When it comes to, so if you have parents who are, you know, from a third world country, you know, my parents are Indian. It's not, you know, my dad never got an education past eighth grade, and my mom never really went to school. So it was difficult for them to find out that, you know, oh, hey, your daughter's disabled. So I don't know. They kind of were grieving that the first time that they heard it. And then, you know, they eventually got used to it, I guess. And then my mom just kind of, you know, she kind of did most of the legwork. Dad was just kind of working mom's a primary caregiver. And having a disabled child, I mean, I'm not nonverbal, I'm not violent, but it's still stressful because the equipment's expensive, the medical care is expensive. If you want a wheelchair, I mean, I can walk, like walking, I can do it, but I can't do it long distances, especially in environments where I'm not familiar in. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have a wheelchair in my garage at home in case I need it, which is the wheelchair I used at Living Skills Camp. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have that just in case. And equipment like the braces, leg braces I wear, you know, that's pretty expensive. So we get that, you know, it's covered. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mostly, you know, education, and then financial expenses are kind of difficult. A child in general is very expensive. And then you add a disability onto that, just like 10 times mm-hmm. more expensive than it should be.
So the fact that people had lowered expectations of you through the school system, I'm imagining that happens in other ways as well, like people underestimating what you can do or assuming that you can't do certain things. Is that a challenge for you?
Yeah, so it's mostly assumptions, really. I was walking down the halls, I think it was like after lunch, with my walker, which is something I'm also provided by the school, and my cane. And I remember a teacher approached me and she's like, didn't meet me. She didn't even get a chance to say hi. And then to my age, like, oh, was she a basis kid? I'm like, what on earth made you think that?
Yeah. Just based on the fact that you have a physical disability, she assumed you must also have an intellectual disability.
Yes.
Right. That same old thing that keeps happening to you.
Yes.
Hi there, listeners. I just wanted to interrupt to tell you how much we appreciate you, but we really want to get our message out there to as many people as possible. So if you are enjoying this podcast, please help us by sharing, liking, subscribing, leave us a rating. And we are so grateful to you for listening each week. And now back to this episode. So how do you manage when things like this happen? Like, I'm thinking about if somebody now in one of your classes said, oh, you can't do this, Priya, it'll be too hard for you or too complicated for you or something like that. And mm-hmm. you knew that you could do it. Like, do you advocate for yourself? Do you speak up for yourself?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I've been doing it since I was 10.
Right. I'd imagine you must have been doing it in order to get as far as you have, because you would have had to have pushed against people telling you all the time that you can't do things.
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes me angry, but I don't lash out. I'm just like, no, actually, I think I can do it, you know? And then I tell the teacher, I'm like, hey, teacher, can I try and give this a shot? And if they're willing to let me do it, I'm like, okay, great.
And what kind of reactions do you get when you prove people wrong?
Wow, that's impressive. And that sweet CRP tone.
Right, the patronizing.
The patronizing, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If I told somebody that I got accepted into Brown University of all places, pre-college mm-hmm. program, they would have said that exact same, how are you going to participate? How are you going to do this? It's like, I can advocate for my professors, you know, with my professors. It's like, it's not a big deal unless they make it a big deal. I just got my acceptance letter today.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks.
What do you want to do after school? Like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm thinking about going to law school.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love it.
Yeah.
And then when you're a lawyer, I want you to go back to your elementary school and just like slap that law degree down on the desk and be like,
I will for sure do that. Yeah.
You show them.
Yeah, exactly.
I imagine you don't meet a lot of people that are blind with CP.
No, it's I think it's very rare that you have both diagnoses.
Yeah. So do you feel kind of like you're the only one?
Oh yeah. Especially in my family, because nobody else in my family is disabled. So I'm like, oh, that's isolating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like coming to Blind Beginnings and being able to connect with other kids who are blind
has helped me a lot.
Yeah. Do you feel different though? Like you've also got CP and most of the kids don't. And like, does that, I don't know. I guess I'm just curious about, you know, how isolating this it is to have a dual diagnosis.
It can be very isolating, but most of the time it isn't really, especially when I'm in school. I mean, I'm not the only blind person now. There's one other student, but well, there's going to be more. I think like two other blind students that are coming next year. Mm-hmm. But as for CP, like nobody is blind and has CP. So it's kind of just like, okay, so I have to navigate, you know, I have a walker and there's, you know, certain challenges that I have to deal with physically. I mean, people with cerebral palsy exist in my school. We are, you know, they're there, but they're sighted. So it's like, well, now I have to be extra cautious in the hallways.
Right.
Because their kids are just like stampeding everywhere. Yeah. And I have to stay on one side of the hallway, which can get frustrating if you don't know what you're doing sometimes. Like I do. And I'm talking to someone, I'm like, and my ear's like, oh no, stay on the left side of the hallway. If there's not many kids there, and I'm like, oh crap, I better do that. I guess I'm talking.
Yeah. So do you connect with the other kids at your school that have CP?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of have like your CP network and you have your blind network.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do have another youth leader who is visually impaired and has CP that you got to meet through Blind Beginnings. What was that like for you?
It felt like there was a burden off my shoulders.
Mm.
It felt amazing.
What do you wish people understood about your disabilities specifically?
Don't raise expectations so high that they can't fulfill them, but don't lower them so much that, you know, it's childish almost. It's comedic how low they get. And that's like, well, no, your kid's not thriving like they want them to, because they're not ready to.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the skills. They don't have the discipline. They don't have, you know, what they need, especially if they're a teenager, to thrive in the adult world.
Mm-hmm.
So because after out of high school, the world doesn't really care. You know, it's going to throw stuff at you. Make your expectations like in the middle, I'd say, not unbelievably low, but not too high to where they can't do it. I mean, that applies for just about any disability, but.
So what sort of things do you find helpful? Like what kind of help do you appreciate from well-meaning people that see you and, you know, kind of acknowledge your disabilities and want to be helpful?
Well, I mean, if I'm at the grocery store, you know, if you're talking about just in general, if I'm at the grocery store and I'm having trouble lifting something that's very heavy, because I can be strong, but I'm not, I'm not lift a car level strong, but
most of us are not.
But yeah, if I need something, you know, if I need someone to help me and they manage to see me, and they're like, hey, can you help with that? I'm like, yes, of course. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm in, you know, I don't need help from anyone. Mm-hmm. It's because that's not realistic. You also, that's the thing. People also need to be realistic about it, their expectations. It's like, mm-hmm. how are you going to get a straight A in something you don't know, in a subject you don't know in school, if you don't have a background in that subject in the first place?
Right. So you're open to people offering to help, asking if they can be helpful?
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to share?
Keep an open mind, but also make sure, you know, listen to this podcast, you know, and the other incredible people that are on it, because we're not all in a box. There's, don't put us in a box. Don't put people with disabilities in boxes, because that's not how we thrive. That's not how we thrive at all.
If there are parents listening who have kids that are visually impaired with cerebral palsy, what advice do you have for them?
I'd say look up some resources that you can find for your children wherever you are. I'm pretty sure there's got to be something. And if you can't find any resources, you know, call places. Do some cold calling. It doesn't hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm. What sort of activities or therapies have been really helpful to you? Because I'm sure a lot that is recommended to families, like physio and OT and all those things. But what do you personally think has really helped you?
If I say, it's difficult to only pin down one, but I'd say physio and OT. Physio is pretty helpful because it helps manage the treatment aspect of it, because it sometimes people's muscles can get really tight mm-hmm. if they have cerebral palsy, and they can get in the way of things. So physio helps with that. And then with occupational therapy, some kids are delayed with independent living skills. Yeah, physio and OT definitely helps. I didn't know how to boil water before. Now I know how to do that. Now we just cook boiled eggs and breakfast during breakfast.
Mm-hmm. And you've done a lot of, you like to swim, right? Do you do swim?
I do like to swim. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I still like to do it, but after COVID, it just kind of ruined everything. And I mean, I still want to do it, but it's like, I don't know if I'll have the time to during the summer, because I have courses that I have to do for Brown. I'll be busy with Brown. So I don't know if I'll have time to. I would love to do lessons, though. I would absolutely love to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Priya. I really appreciate you sharing about your disabilities and joining me on the podcast today.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you'll have to come back sometime.
I will, totally.
Okay. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.
This podcast has been brought to you by Blind Beginnings, an organization based in Vancouver, Canada, that supports children and youth who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families. Music for this podcast is composed by Sean Bishop and Clement Chow. Production and audio editing by Rob Minot. For more information about Blind Beginnings and the work it does to support children and youth who are blind and partially sighted, along with their families, visit us on the web at www.blindbeginnings.ca, and also remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.